Thank you very much, Nani, for the presentation. I would like to really thank the organizers of this symposium for the opportunity to present both a poster and also this talk to share the results of several populations that we have screened at Africa Rise Senegal Station for adaptation and also for high yield potential. I did this work in collaboration with several colleagues. Yeah, I'm the irrigated breeder for Africa Rise based in Senegal. And just as a recap to what my colleague mentioned earlier in the day, in the Africa, rice production in Africa is actually predominated by the rain-fed system, but you find the irrigated systems actually are becoming more and more important. As I mentioned, the irrigated perimeters actually are getting more important because earlier on, about 5 years ago, until about 5 years ago, we had about only maybe 12 to 13% of the total production in Africa. The area was occupied by irrigated rice, but presently we are almost about a quarter of the rice produced in Africa is done in the irrigated perimeters. But my talk actually is more about the Sahel zone. The Sahel zone in Africa is quite interesting because it's a zone characterized mainly by very dry climate. The rainfall is very, very low. As we could see here, rainfall in the Sahel belt, which is the zone just south of the Sahara Desert. Rainfall effectively is about less than 90 days effective rainfall that we have in the year. So most times, rainfall is not sufficient for rice production. But the big advantage in this zone is that actually, because of the dry climate and the high solar radiation, the yield potential is very high. And we also have very major river systems here, the Senegal River and also the Niger River, as well as the Volta in Ghana. So as a result of that, irrigated rice production in West Africa is very highly concentrated in this band of the Sahel zone. In this zone, we have yields that can top up to 12 tons, 13 tons. If farmers' fields, we are getting up to 10 tons per hectare. So definitely, it contains a zone whereby the yield potential is very high, and it has a huge potential for Africa in our drive to get rice self-sufficiency in the continent. But the Sahel, as I mentioned, is characterized also by a very difficult weather system. In the dry season, we have what we call heat stress, if you look at the weather temperature, because we have two different climatic zones in the Sahel. We have the coastal climate, where close to the Atlantic Ocean side, we find the diurnal differences in the temperature are very mild. But once you go into the continent, that's where we have what we call continental climate. Thereby, the diurnal variations are very, very sharp. You can get very, very cold weather relatively during the dry season, even in the coastal zones. But if you go to the internal areas, inland areas, here the cold stress, as we can see, in some years we can get less than 10 degrees Celsius, which is quite surprising, I'm sure, to many people. So here during the dry season, we get cold stress. But during the same dry season, which is the zone between the red lines here, we get heat stress towards the maturity stage of the crop. So in this early part of the season, during the seedling stage, we get cold stress at the seedling stage, whilst at the reproductive stage, heat stress. But during the wet season also, if at all the farmers get a delay in planting, because sometimes that's the big problem, there is a very narrow window between the harvesting period for the dry season crop and the wet season crop, which imposes quite a stress. So if at all the farmers you want to really do intensification with rice, we need to be able to get rice, two crops of rice within the year. So for that to be able to happen, we have to harvest your dry season crop early enough so that before the rains start here, by that time you already clear your field of rice. So to be able to get that, you have to have rice varieties that are tolerant or resistant to cold during the seedling stage so that this first arrow here can move backwards and allow you to have varieties that can mature within 4 months so that by May, when you plant in January or December, by May already you clear your field. So this is the big challenge that we are getting now. So now this is the reason why in the Sahel it's quite challenging for us to try to get varieties that have good yield potential, but at the same time they need to have resistance to extremes of temperature. But also, apart from the temperature extremes, we also have other attendant problems also in the Sahel. This is just to give a summary. We have the different ecologies, which are my colleague Jeff mentioned to earlier, the upland hydromorphic system. But in the Sahel zone, like I mentioned, it's mainly the irrigated rice that we have. So in this zone, as a result of proximity to the Atlantic Ocean, there also we have problems with salinity also. So salinity stress also can be a problem sometimes in our zone. And also we have, due to the lateritic soils that we have, when the soils are submerged for some time, we also get problems of iron toxicity. We have biotic problems also that are also in the system there. But in the irrigated system, most of the rice varieties that are cultivated actually happen to be indicas. As you can see, the variety, the distribution of the variety, different subspecies of rice according to the ecologies. You find the indicas are mainly in the lowlands, while the japonicas are mainly in the uplands. But we do have quite a few japonicas also in the rainfed lowlands, so and irrigated lowlands. At our station, we decided to, in partnership with IRI and other colleagues, Embrapa, SIAT, to partner with them and try to characterize diversity panels of rice for adaptation and also for high yield potential. We started these activities even before GRISP came. We had a project with partners at, in SIRAT. There was a panel which we called the Oritash panel, which comprised mainly indicas, which we screened in the Senegal over six different planting days to try to identify varieties that have adaptation for high yield, but also at the same time for different temperature adaptations. And there's another panel also, as we have a GRISP panel of indica 300 accessions, which we screen for different traits, for high yield potential, salinity, cold, heat, and also for anaerobic germination tolerance. And then I also supervise a PhD student who also got a collection of material, both indica and japonicas, which we are also screened for cold tolerance at both seedling and reproductive stages. And then I have a postdoc also who worked on high yield potential screening of our 160 accessions. So these are the different screening approaches that we had, both under cold control conditions and also in the field situation. For the 220 materials, the indica japonica population that was screened by my PhD student. So for three, she actually screened them for different planting dates. See, I'm just presenting for two planting dates. So in one of the planting dates, when cold stress actually coincides with the seedling stage, there we found out that yield was much more correlated with, harvest index, and also panicle exertion, and also plant height, negatively correlated to panicle exertion and also plant height. But during when the cold stress coincided with the reproductive stage of the crop, there we find out that actually indeed cold stress was highly correlated with a harvest index again, positively correlated with panicle exertion, and then of course negatively correlated with sterility, which means positively correlated with fertility. So we had other populations too, like I mentioned, which we also evaluated on the field, and this is just to show the quality of the data. The heritabilities were very high in these populations too for different agromorphological traits with regards to tillering all the way to leaf chlorophyll content and then yield components. And then also this other population too, we evaluated for yield and yield-related traits, and we got very good heritabilities for yield. Then the indica japonica population, we did the sequencing of the population in collaboration with SIRAT, and after data cleaning, we used about 900 SNP markers to do the diversity analysis using Darwin, and most of the population actually we found that grouped under the indicas. But then we had quite a small population, small set of materials that were actually japonicas, so the distinction is quite clear. And then the distribution of the SNPs also, after the diversity analysis, we conducted GWAS using about 43,000 SNP markers. The SNPs that we found were significantly associated to the different traits, starting with yield. When we planted the crop during the January planting date, we had quite a few significant SNPs. So for grain yield, we had at least SNPs located on chromosomes 1, 3, 4, 9, and 12. And as you could see, we had a fairly high lot scores. And then also for flowering date also, we had SNP markers that were significantly associated with flowering date during the second planting date. That was the January planting date also, at least three different chromosomes. Likewise, for spikelet fertility also, that one to be find significant SNP markers, and as well as for panicle exertion. When we looked at the locations of the markers, of the SNP markers, the significant SNP markers, we identified that actually, yeah. So for grain yield, we found at least some of the peak markers located on chromosomes 12, 4, 3, and 1. But then when we look at some of the other traits, we found, for example, on chromosome 2, we find some of the markers actually which tended to be for fertility, but also I think it was for panicle exertion on chromosome 11, but also for flowering date. When we look at the two peak SNP markers, we found that actually they tend to be localized in similar regions. So after this work, we also developed some population, biparental populations, using cold tolerant and cold sensitive parental lines, indicas and japonicas. And the postdocs, the student also worked on SSR markers, trying to identify interesting QTLs on this population, the biparental population. The idea was to try to validate the SNP marker that we found in the unstructured population. And here, interestingly, we found quite a lot of some very good QTLs that are very, very promising, with very high load scores and also very good R-squares. So the idea for us right now is actually to try to work further to validate these QTLs that we identified in the different population, the structured population, that's the biparental population, but also in the GWAS panel, to try to make sure that we validate those SNPs that are significantly related to yield and yield-related traits. Here also, I just want to share one of the results from what we call the other panel that we call the Oritash panel, which came from an earlier trial. There too, we found some SNP markers for straw dry weight on chromosome 5, and also above ground dry matter, and also grain yield on chromosome 1. So in the different panels, when we do the analysis, we find loci actually which are very closely linked to yield and yield components. And right now, the next idea that we have now is to work with our partners. Like we mentioned, this population have been screened in different locations, because the population were screened by Embrapa in Brazil, and also by SIAT in Colombia, and also by our colleagues IRI in Philippines. So we want to look forward now is to try to confirm whether the SNPs that are significantly associated to yield in Africa for adaptation and also for high yield potential, whether the same SNPs will be relevant to other areas of the world, or do we have actually SNPs or genes that will be only for local significance. And further to that, for myself, I'm very much interested actually to try to see how best we can use these SNPs now in a program of marker-assisted selection. But then also after the marker-assisted selection, my other objective is to initiate genomic selection, because like you mentioned, we have quite a few diversity panels which have been sequenced, and we also have phenotype data in African conditions. So right now we want to be able to develop models in collaboration with CIRAD so that we can make good predictions and be able to make new varieties much more efficiently using the sequence data. And with that, I want to thank particularly my partners, the donor Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and also the partners from China, CAS, and then SIAT Colombia, and then CORAF, and then the other partners. But in Africa Rise, like was mentioned earlier, one of our strong points is actually the partnership. So here I really want to thank very much the national partners from Africa that very much partnered in this research. And with that, I want to thank you very much for your attention.